Steve Koprintz is managing partner at Koprintz Law and writing about a proposal in the House of Representatives that could make a big difference for businesses of all sizes. Steve, it's great to talk to you again. You're writing about the simplified acquisition threshold. What's the significance of the increase, and what is the increase the House is proposing right now? Thanks for joining me, Steve.
Oh, thanks for having me, Francis. Yeah, the House is proposing a major increase to the simplified acquisition threshold, and as your listeners may know, the simplified acquisition threshold is essentially a dollar amount that's set by law under which procuring agencies can use streamlined mechanisms to procure goods and services. And so some of those mechanisms really are for the benefit of small businesses in many cases who are able to obtain contracts under these streamlined procedures. And so there's a statute out there that sets the simplified acquisition threshold. It's often called the SAT, so it's not the test, you know, that you took in high school. It's a simplified acquisition threshold, SAT, is how it's referred to in a lot of the correspondence you'll see about this. It's set at $100,000 by statute, but there's a directive in the statute that asks the FAR Council to take a look every 5 years and adjust it for inflation. The FAR Council recently did that, and so the statute says $100,000, the SAT is currently at $150,000. Now, 2016 National Defense Authorization Act is currently pending between both the House and the Senate. And the House, although not the Senate version, but the House version of the 2016 NDAA proposes to increase the simplified acquisition threshold to $500,000, you know, $500,000. So it would be more than triple the current amount of $150,000 that is the inflation-adjusted simplified acquisition threshold.
The significance here applies to both small and large businesses, because the National Defense Authorization Act language very explicitly states that it would, according to the committee report from the House Armed Services Committee, further enable federal agencies to buy products and services more quickly, more economically, and with a focus on small business. But if one subscribes to the $1 here versus $1 there theory, that means that if more business goes to small business, that increases the number of competitors for companies that don't currently qualify as small businesses. Is that correct, Steve?
Well, that's right, Francis. I mean, the dollar's a dollar. And so if it's not going to a large business and it's going to a small instead, then that's $1 less potentially that the large business is receiving. Now, the simplified acquisition threshold, of course, is not it's not small business set aside. It's not a mechanism that's exclusively for small businesses. Large businesses can receive simplified acquisitions as well, but it is a mechanism that contract announcers do often use to award contracts to small businesses. And in fact, when simplified acquisitions are competed, there is an overwhelming presumption, essentially, of making it a small business set aside, so long as two or more small businesses are able to provide offers at reasonable prices. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. We may see some pushback from large businesses on this, who suddenly realize that sort of increase might not be the most beneficial to them.
And that's not insignificant to the large businesses. I started to hear about 2 years ago, you mentioned your friend Guy Timberlake at the American Small Business Coalition in this blog post, and he was the first person to alert me to the fact that the businesses that he works with were starting to say, hey, I'm getting competitors now who are coming down from larger contracts, who maybe a couple of years ago wouldn't have competed for a contract of the size that I'm going after, and now they are. So this pressure has continued as the budgets shrink, and as the perception, at least, that contracting is going to get smaller in the coming years continues. So this is not a case where one can simply say, well, it's the small deals and the small businesses are going to go after those anyway, and so it's not really that potentially big an effect for the mid-sized companies who might want to go after a $450,000 deal.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And there was certainly an era there in government contracting when budgets were increasing every year's contract, dollars were increasing every year's, where that may have been the case in large part, where essentially some businesses, mid-tiers especially, large businesses said, yeah, those contracts, they're small potatoes. They're not what we're looking for. But as those budgets continue to shrink, you've got your various sequestrations and budgetary issues that go on on Capitol Hill, overall contract dollar spending has been decreasing now. And so what we see is more of these mid-tiers, these large businesses who may not have been so interested in these smaller contracts before, saying, you know what, dollar's a dollar. We want to get those contracts too. And so that's definitely, I think, going to have to be a consideration, part and parcel with this simplified acquisition threshold, that when you go up to that $500,000 level, if that's what's done, those contracts are of interest to some contractors who don't qualify as small.
Steve Koprince is managing partner of Koprince Law and hosts the Small GovCon blog at smallgovcon.com, and we have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You mentioned that this language, Steve, is in the House version of the National Defense Authorization Act, but not in the Senate version. Is there significance there, and do we have any sense of whether it's something that we might wind up seeing go one way or the other in conference if it comes down to making it through each body in one version but not the other?
Yeah, and I have not seen anything that would give me a sense one way or the other on that right now, Francis. It's there in the House version. It's not there in the Senate version. That's typical of many procedures of the NDAA. Each year, many provisions of the NDAA in which they end up getting ironed out in conference. That happened last year when the House had the big proposals to eliminate this, essentially the Center for Verification Evaluation, the VA, to eliminate reverse auctions, and the Senate put the brakes on both of those. This, I don't know if will be as controversial as those two items were, but as our discussion about large businesses, mid-tiers shows, I think there is going to be some controversy, so it'll be very interesting to see, assuming these both make it through the full body, because they have yet to do it. They're both scheduled for four votes, made it through committee, but have yet to be passed by the full body. But if both House and Senate bills pass, essentially, at least this provision in the form they currently are, I don't have a sense what the conference committee will do, but I'll be very interested to see.
Steve, also on your blog at smallgovcon.com, your colleague Matthew Schoonover is writing about a recent GAO decision. The title of the piece is "Agency Need Not Raise Offerer's High Price in Discussions," according to the Government Accountability Office. What are the facts of this case, and what should companies know about it?
Yeah, this is an interesting GAO case called Joint Logistics Managers, Inc. And this is a case that talks about what are the government's obligations regarding pricing when it comes to discussions. And discussions are, of course, the setting in a negotiated procurement where proposals have been submitted, and then the government opens up talks with the offerors and says, now here are your weaknesses, here are your deficiencies, here are your significant weaknesses. And that's the touchstone for what the government is supposed to discuss with each offeror if it chooses. And then usually they don't have to. If they choose to open discussion, they're supposed to advise the offeror of weaknesses, significant weaknesses, and deficiencies in the proposal, and then give those offerors the chance to submit revised proposals addressing those matters. And so in this case, the government did that. They opened discussions. There's a Marine Corps task order procurement. They chose to open discussions. And there was a company called Joint Logistics Managers that submitted a proposal. Discussions were open. And the government didn't say anything about Joint Logistics Managers pricing. Well, it turned out that JLMI's pricing was significantly higher than that of its primary competitor. This is quite a bit higher, about $3 million or something like that, of a procurement that was a $16 to $20 million type range for pricing. But the government didn't say anything about that in discussion. Award the contract then to the competitor. And Joint Logistics Managers filed a GAO protest, and their argument essentially was that, hey, government, your discussions weren't meaningful. You know, in this setting, our pricing was significantly higher than our competitors, and that pricing itself was a significant weakness. In fact, according to government, the price was the reason that Joint Logistics Managers didn't get the contract, because their proposal was slightly higher on the non-price factors. And so, yeah, that sounds like a good argument. Like, hey, our pricing was so high, you know, you thought that was the key discriminator between proposals. You didn't raise it. These discussions weren't those kind of unfair discussions. And the GAO said no. The GAO said that when the FAR provision on discussions talks about weaknesses, significant weaknesses, and deficiencies, it means essentially non-price, technical type matters. And the pricing is more discretionary, that even when the government chooses to open discussions, They don't need to advise an offeror that its price is too high or high versus the prices submitted by the competitors unless the price is so high as to render the proposal unacceptable. In other words, no reasonable buyer would pay that price for that service. And so in this case, you know, Joint Logistics Manager's price wasn't unacceptably high. It was still a reasonable price that someone might have paid for that service. It was just too much of a price difference between that price and the one submitted by the competitor to permit Joint Logistics Managers to get the contract. So something important for contractors to keep in mind that when discussions are opened, the government's silence regarding pricing doesn't mean that the pricing is all good.
Steve, excellent insight as always, and I thank you very much for joining me today.
Great. Thank you, Francis. I appreciate being on the show as always and look forward to doing it again soon.